This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov, welcome back.
Thank you.
Diving right into an election year, because with the war going on, we don't have a lot of time to speak about how people are trying to get ready for the elections. And there is a lot of work that's going on in the background in order to try to prepare for elections. Just to remind listeners that we are due to have elections this year sometime before October. My expectation is that it'll probably be nearer to October than earlier, even though there is the possibility of an early election being called. But the people who are really being able to prepare and get themselves ready is, of course, Naftali Bennett, who is currently not in the political arena at all. He withdrew from politics after his previous term as prime minister, and he is now together with Yair Lapid. They're running on a joint list in order to try to unseat current Prime Minister Netanyahu. Apparently, they are also putting together some sort of an agreement with Gadi Eisenkot, former chief of general staff, who has a list of his own. I'm not quite sure if they're going to combine him together or if they're going to somehow try to cooperate so that they will come together as part of a coalition. Interestingly, Gadi Eisenkot is promoting the idea of a Druze person being given a very prominent position on his list to ensure that they enter parliament. And even though it's not the first time that a Druze person obviously will have sat in the Knesset, Gadi Eisenkot is really promoting this as a kind of a strategy, as part of his policy, to try to ensure that the Druze have got good representation in the Knesset. So it's certainly getting interesting. There are opinion polls out there. Some of them have suggested that Naftali Bennett, who will be the prime minister if his coalition list comes in, and Yair Lapid has already vacated the possibility of him demanding a term as prime minister. And Yair Lapid, interestingly enough, has already said that he's willing to give up his number two spot on the joint list that's been put together with Naftali Bennett if Gadi Eisenkot joins their group to try and give Gadi Eisenkot some little incentive to join a joint list. So currently, the opinion polls have suggested that by Lapid and Bennett coming together, that they actually would get less seats than if they'd run separately and joined together as part of a coalition. But between now and October, there's a lot of water to flow under this bridge. And so even though our attention is being drawn elsewhere, this is clearly a major issue. And we know that the views on Prime Minister Netanyahu seem to be in two extreme camps. There seem to be very few people in the middle ground about whether they support him or they don't support him. I just wonder what listeners feel about the Prime Minister. We do know that he's had his issues. He's been charged with fraud and he's been charged with acting in a way which is not becoming of a Prime Minister. He's also accused of essentially being a little asleep when the October the 7th attacks took place, that he'd been warned that he should have been more prepared. But he's certainly brought out the forces since October the 7th, and there's certainly some incredible achievements that one can point to since then. What do we think about him today?
I'd love to hear. Naftali Bennett or Netanyahu, 061-895-1019, because politics isn't perfect. So I might think that it's time for new leadership, but do I really think it should be Naftali Bennett? Well, that, I guess, is the question. 061-895-1019, that's what we are asking you. If you had to vote today, which of the two would you vote for? Whilst people do that, indications are that the US is settling in for a long siege of the Strait of Hormuz. So what exactly, what is Israel expecting now in terms of this war?
Well, it's interesting that the U.S. administration seems to be wanting to fight an economic battle rather than a military battle, even though we do understand that the president is due to receive a briefing later today about what the U.S. military would plan to do if the hostilities, if the military operation against Iran was assumed again. But for now, at least, there seems to be so much more concentration on the economic impact of the siege of the Straits of Hormuz. The latest report suggests that more than 40 oil tankers have been blocked from going through the Straits of Hormuz by the U.S. Navy that is in the area and laying siege and blockading the straits. And the U.S. Administration has estimated that those 40 tankers that were not allowed to pass through the Straits of Hormuz have cost the Iranian regime around $6 billion in terms of oil that hasn't been sold, or in terms of fees that haven't been charged, whatever it is. It's cost the Iranian regime $6 billion. And there continues to be this view that the economic siege is the major part of what the U.S. is going to be doing moving forward rather than a military activity. What's interesting for me is that Israel seems almost to have completely withdrawn from that arena. You don't hear about Israel being involved at all in all of the negotiations backwards and forwards, in all of the shenanigans, in all of the, is he going to go to Islamabad? Is he not going to go to Islamabad? There doesn't seem to be any Israeli angle at all to any of that. And it seems to me that Israel is somewhat withdrawn from the Iranian arena and is now allowing the U.S. to confront Iran directly, whereas the military operation was predominantly conducted by Israeli military assets, planes in the most part, but also navy and feet on the ground. You would be surprised the number of boots that were on the ground in Iran during the latest conflict. Mostly Israeli, with lots and lots of support from the U.S. military, both active support and passive support, including the supply and resupply of weapons and military equipment and things like that. Clearly, the U.S. military has been extremely involved. I don't want to somehow dilute involvement and the importance of the military aspect that the U.S. provided during the recent war. But let's be honest, most of the front line of the attacks were carried out by the IDF. And now that that's all over, it's all between the U.S. and Iran directly. And Israel is sort of withdrawn, very focused at the moment on Lebanon. And we'll talk a little bit about that separately. Very focused on Lebanon, which, of course, is a linked issue. But as far as Iran is concerned, it's interesting for me that somehow Israel has managed to extricate itself from the whole Iranian arena. And let's see what happens next. I think that while the economic blockade continues and the focus is on economic issues, Israel is out of the picture. The moment it becomes more of a military operation, if we return back to military hostilities, then I have little doubt that in the first instance, Iran will renew its attacks against Israel. And the moment it attacks Israel militarily again, Israel is clearly drawn back in. I also think that if the U.S. decides to mount a military attack against Iran in the future, that Israel will almost certainly be involved directly or indirectly. But for now, at least, interestingly, Israel seems to kind of be out of the picture.
It is odd. It is very, very strange. Let's talk about Lebanon. The Prime Minister is reported to have discussed this with President Trump. What's expected over the next few days and weeks?
Yeah, I mean, the situation in Lebanon is a little confusing because on the one hand, we know that the president made that famous statement that Israel is prohibited from carrying out attacks in Lebanon in order to somehow bring the Lebanese card to the Iranian peace negotiations. Iran had demanded there be a ceasefire in Lebanon. Israel and the US initially disagreed with that and opposed that idea. And then President Trump seemed to understand that if he didn't bring Lebanon to the party and create some sort of a ceasefire in Lebanon, that the discussions with Iran were not going to progress anywhere. And so therefore, he demanded of Israel publicly that there be no attacks. What that essentially meant for the IDF and for Israel is not that there were no attacks, but there was certainly a slowdown. There was certainly much, much lower level of intensity of attacks against Iran. And actually, the prime minister has said, we haven't attacked north of the Litani River. I'm not sure, by the way, that that's correct, because I did see a report in the last day or two that but the Bekaa Valley, for example, was quite heavily attacked. And yesterday, that attack, and I spoke about this in my report yesterday, the attack that was carried against that huge tunnel, the 2-kilometer-long tunnel that was found underground in Lebanon, that particular attack registered on the seismic scales, on the seismic readers around the Middle East, that they all had readings that almost indicated that it was tantamount to something like an earthquake, the extent of those explosions against the tunnel and the caches of military equipment that were found underground in Lebanon. So one cannot deny that the IDF has carried out major attacks against Lebanon, even under the so-called ceasefire scenario. So we understand that when the prime minister spoke to President Trump, which I think might have been last night or the night before in the last few days anyway, that the prime minister put forward the idea that this situation, which is what Israel considers to be a slowdown of attacks against Lebanon, can persist, according to what the prime minister has requested, for another 2 or 3 weeks. But thereafter, the prime minister is asking President Trump to give him a freer hand to carry out operations on a much wider and more intensive scale against Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. So if what we're seeing now with seismic readers registering Israeli attacks, and every day we hear reports about IDF carrying out attacks in Lebanon, very, very targeted attacks against individuals or indeed attacks against Hezbollah infrastructure. If that is considered to be a slowdown, then we could imagine what's going to happen in 2 or 3 weeks' time if Israel is given a freer hand. The IDF Chief of General Staff, interestingly, has said there is no ceasefire with Lebanon. He made that statement publicly, meaning that the IDF continues its activities against Hezbollah. And let's be honest, even if those activities are focused south of the Litani River, the IDF has found more than enough to keep itself busy in terms of what Hezbollah has built in that area to be a threat against Israel. So for now, that area is being cleaned up. And let's not be drawn into this very emotional debate about why is Israel attacking residential homes? Why is it wiping out entire villages? Well, on the Prime Minister's X account yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu showed a house, a residential home, which from the outside looks all very innocent. And then when you zoom in, you can see a rocket launcher inside that house. Through the window, you can see the rocket launcher that's inside that house. So the point is that not only is Israel being forced to attack military targets, which are kind of dressed up as military targets and which are clearly military targets, but also being forced to clear out civilian-looking targets, which are really military targets, but dressed up in order to try to bring sympathy from the rest of the world. And unfortunately, that means that this needs to be almost a wholesale clear out of what's going on in southern Lebanon in order to ensure that no stone is left unturned in terms of Israel clearing out what could potentially be a threat in the future. So just when you read news and you see the mass devastation is going on in southern Lebanon, and there's no doubt that there is mass devastation at the hands of the IDF in southern Lebanon, let's remember that most of southern Lebanon has been set up to attack Israel almost across the board, including within civilian infrastructure, and we need to somehow take care of that.
I know that we can't expect anything decent or reasonable from the United Nations, but why hasn't Israel used the fact that there is a United Nations regulation around Hezbollah where they aren't allowed to be, the fact that they have breached this for years and years, the fact that there was an agreement as recently as a short while ago to reinforce this? Why don't we see this as a talking point?
It certainly is a talking point, but the question is to what extent it might have influence over the situation. And I think right now, rather than trying to be, you know, diplomatically holier than thou and taking the upper road, the high road on diplomatic discussion, I think right now it's really all about facts on the ground. And discussions at the United Nations certainly won't impact that. We've seen the United Nations force in Lebanon being around, some of them even being killed, some of those soldiers from foreign countries who are part of the United Nations force being injured and killed as a result of Hezbollah fire and activity. But they are very ineffective. The United Nations has been very ineffective. Discussions at the United Nations will unlikely bring any results at all, and probably won't even bring headlines. I don't know that it would even be reported, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that is the case. That is where we do need to leave it. Anthony Rauch, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.